Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this January the 17th on the West Coast, now January the 18th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. This past day, we here in America celebrated the birthday of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., although he was born on the 15th, they picked the 17th to celebrate this day. And before we bring on tonight's guest, Dr. A. Truott, I just want to play a little musical ditty that I picked out. And I think as the show progresses, you'll understand why I picked this song.
Introduced myself and asked her what would she like. She said a Bloody Mary, a screwdriver would be cool. Because tonight I'm breaking all the rules and I'm ready. Can't you see I'm all tore? She said you want the doctor on all shove. She said a problem at my home. Me and my old man, we can't get along. She said, I need a man that's cool and kind. When I saw you, you blew my mind. I'm ready. Can't you see I'm all torn? She said, you what the doctor ordered. Oh, sure. But I can see that you're my kind of man. She said, I'm not the kind that's easy to use, but you caught me in the right mood. I'm ready. Can't you see I'm all tore? She said, you what the doctor ordered. Oh, shucks.
Sure, the listening audience is wondering what the heck is going on, but we're going to go ahead and bring on tonight's guest. He hosts his own show on the microeffect.com. It's called the story behind the story. He is a researcher, an author, a lecturer, and a teacher, a naturopath, and a PhD. My good friend, Dr. H. Ott. Dr. Ott, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be on the show. The 2-hour show I just did on my own just went like time, like it was liquid time. It just went so fast because there was so much to talk about on this subject. The story behind the story, if you will, of Michael King, who really never formally changed his name on his birth certificate or any legal structure to Martin Luther King. And Michael King is his name. And there's just so much the public don't know about this man. I had to share it with the risk of being called a bigot or racist. I hope that doesn't stick here. I just tell it the way, you know, the information is. Mm-hmm. That's all there is to it. So, yeah, it's been interesting.
Well, I'm concernedly. I'm in a position to vouch for the fact that you're not a bigot, and I can say that I'm not. Certainly, I play a lot of R&B and jazz and soul music on my show. I like all kinds of music, actually. I connect with that music because of the rhythm, the chords, the melodies, the whole thing, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, and I got to tell you, Don, I grew up in a place called Hawthorne, Nevada, which the primary employer was the U.S. Navy. It was the Navy's ammunition depot. My father worked there in civil service. And because of equal opportunity employer, you know.
Okay, it sounds like we just lost Dr. Ott's audio. I guess when we do a controversial show, we have these problems. If you're with
hello,
us,
can you hear?
Oh yeah, you're sort of dropping in and out, but I could hear you for a moment there. Keep trying.
Yeah. Okay. I was in a high school that was about as racially integrated as you could possibly get.
I think you're back with us now. You're sort of dropping in and out.
Huh, that's really strange. I hear you just fine, but I don't know. Should we just – can you hear me okay, Don?
Yeah, you're good now.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, you were saying you went to a school that was integrated and
– yeah, our high school. I played basketball. I was – I got my height real quick. I was a 6'7" forward, our center on the basketball team. Again – there were 3 out of 12 that were white. The rest were Hispanic and mostly black. I mean, the bottom line is the black African American people are just they're skilled in basketball and other sports. They are typically just built more physically strong. I mean, that's my personal observation of competing with a man. I was a 6'7" forward, and our center was all of 6'2", but my goodness, he could jump over my head. I mean, it's just physical abilities that I didn't have. And no matter how hard I worked in the gym, no matter how hard I tried to increase my vertical leap, it just wasn't there. 5 inches shorter than I was, and he could flat out, you know, reverse dunk 5 times better than I could. And so I grew up with the respect, and it was right, you know, that just because there's their skin is a different color doesn't mean you can't, you know, and get along and physically become strong friends with them. And I did, and so I've maintained contact with a number of my high school African-American friends. We became very close friends, and we had discussions. This is I graduated from high school in 1977. And so, yeah, you know, there's a lot to be said about the African-American culture. yeah, there's people that really work hard that don't believe in any of this give me mentality. They don't believe in this. I deserve something from the government because of all the years of suppression. And there's African Americans that just absolutely know that's poison. And then there's others that's just their culture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what I'm getting at here with, you know, there seems to be a undercurrent of entitlement mentality is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. The topic that we're going to discuss tonight seems to be very much tied into the topic of what we generally talk about going on today. And in a different way, but as far as who put all this together. And I think that's,
oh yeah, it's an agenda. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've come to realize. And that's what I discussed on my show today. Now, let me just say unequivocally that I'm absolutely an absolute proponent of equal rights and civil rights is absolutely important. But we shouldn't be focusing on civil rights to the point of discriminating against white people.
Yeah, reverse discrimination.
Reverse discrimination. A classic example is my father. He was working his very hard. He had fulfilled all the requirements for advancement to a senior position, a higher grade, okay, in the civil service structure, and yet he was not given an advancement because there was no black man in that upper management, and they advanced a man with less qualifications, less time on the job, less seniority, in every way, shape, and form, inferior. And they flat out told him it's nothing personal. We just have to fulfill these quotas. Okay, this is a government structure, you see, and that's a problem, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It was bitter, bitter pill, and so yeah, you know, you've got to have equality, but that means equality on all sides, all right? And I think during the 60s and 70s, it's my opinion that this has kind of gone too much on the other side, with thanks to Jesse Jackson and Council on Foreign Relations programs. Now, Don, I want to just bring this out. When I was researching the topic of Dr. Martin Luther King, and coming up with what I discovered and eyewitness testimony and affidavits put out by FBI agents and the reasons why they were monitoring him for a decade, okay, I came across the interesting information on the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Do you realize that this was actually formed in the year 1909?
Yes, yes.
And do you realize that from 1909 until the 1970s, the presidents of the NAACP and all the board members were white Jews?
Mm-hmm. They were putting the infrastructure together for this whole thing, basically.
You know, unbelievable. Not only were they white and Jewish, but they were also known communists, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Dr. Ott, people are thinking, well, this is racist. No, it's not. It's fact. I mean, this, you can just do your own research on NAACP's history. Mm-hmm. First president was Arthur Springorn, and only white Jews served as NAACP presidents until the mid-1970s. Wow. What is this? National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? Run by Marxist Jews?
Mm-hmm. I would like to mention something, and I think because of the time sequence, I think it's significant. We could come back to it at some point. There was an assassination attempt on Dr. King on September 20th of 1958. He was at a book signing in Harlem on 125th Street, and he was approached by one Isola Ware Curry. The only information we have on her is that she was born in 1916. She is described in her Wikipedia article as an African-American woman who attempted to assassinate civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Born in Georgia, she stabbed King with a letter opener at a New York City book signing on September 20th, 1958. They go on to talk about his assassination. Then they say something very strange. It is unknown what became of Curry following her failed assassination attempt on King, or whether she is dead or alive. Now, we've heard the story. They don't keep good records. I'm going to read another couple of sentences here. Curry was born in Adrian, Georgia, and moved to New York at the age of 20, where she found work as a housekeeper. So you're talking about 1936. We don't have an exact date. Martin Luther King Jr., we don't know if he was still Martin or Michael at that time. But nevertheless, he would have been 7 years old. Okay. Shortly after moving, she developed delusions about the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or the NAACP. I find that rather interesting. When Strive Toward Freedom was published, King went on a tour to promote it during a book signing at a department store in New York City. A well-dressed woman approached and asked him if he was Martin Luther King Jr. When King replied in the affirmative, she said, "I've been looking for you for 5 years," then stabbed him in the chest with a steel letter opener. Now, I'm going to skip over some of the article, but they conclude, on October 17th, minutes after hearing King's testimony, a grand jury indicted Mrs. Curry for attempted murder. As a result of her indictment and subsequent hearings, she was adjudicated incompetent to stand trial and was committed to Matthewan State Hospital for the criminally insane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how could they not know what happened to her? And she would have been 42 years old at the time of the assassination attempt. It just it doesn't make any sense that for 22 years she harbored this anger. For 17 years she harbored the anger and then went looking for him for five. It's another psyop. This is another intel plot here that we're listening to.
Indeed.
And how would they not know where she was when she was in the care of a state mental institution? cover up. One after the other. Now, I didn't write the article. I'm just reading it to you. But it doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. Worse, they didn't keep good records in those days.
I guess not. Now, I also discussed in depth this interview by Pastor Walter White in 1976 with Harold Rosenthal, a 29-year-old assistant to Jewish Senator Jacob Javits. And Harold Rosenthal just really, spilled the beans here. This was an audio tape and then transcribed into book form. You can actually download it on a lot of websites now that have this. It's entitled The Hidden Tyranny, The Issue That Dwarfs All Other Issues. Also, if you just type in the Rosenthal document, you can read it. But here on my copy in page 19, it's in the little booklet, Rosenthal makes some very amazing declarations. He says, quote, "Through religion," now King, where did Martin Luther King or Michael King come to us from the religious sect, right, the doctor of theology. through religion, we have gained complete control of society, government, and economics. And he says here, we, meaning the Jewish hierarchy, which of course includes the mafioso, the mafia dons, organized the Jewish mafia, the Meyer Lansky crowd, okay? Mm-hmm. No law, he says, is ever passed except its merits have previously been taught from the pulpits. An example of this is race equality, which led to integration and ultimately to mongrelization. He says, the gullible clergy in one breath instruct the parishioners that we, the Jews, are a special chosen people, while in another breath proclaim all races are the same. Their inconsistency is never discovered. So we Jews enjoy a special place in society, while all other races are reduced to common equality. It is for this reason that we authored the race equality hoax, thereby reducing all to a lower level than ourselves. Now again, ladies and gentlemen, in this instance, we're talking about the Ashkenazi Jewish race, not a religion. Let's make that very clear. They want to kind of blur the lines there too, that you can, well, you can join up and, you know, come and have a bar mitzvah and whatever and join a synagogue, and then automatically makes you a Jew. Well, in the religion of Judaism, that's true in a way, but we're talking about the race of Ashkenazi bloodlines here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, there are Jews that are not part of that race.
Or exactly.
That group.
The Sephardic Jews are not.
Yes.
And so we don't need to go into that. But see, here is the agenda. This is why you see the NAACP in 1909, again, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, without a single colored person on the board or directing it. Isn't that just kind of telling right there in itself? Again, we're talking about individuals that are clearly communistic. Now, in 1909, you see, of course, the infiltration of the same communist agenda into Russia. You see the overthrow eventually of the Tsar Nicholas and his family. You see it done through manipulation of the currency primarily, where you have, again, the dissatisfaction among the working class, all of it to dismantle the sole superpower in Europe at the time was Tsarist Russia. You see in the Bolshevik revolution, the advent of Stalin and Lenin and going on into the 20s and 30s, tens and tens of millions of Christians are slaughtered in that time frame, culminating with the end of World War II and the beginning of the Cold War era. Okay, so this is going on here in America very quietly, very behind the scenes. But we see the same group of people working. We see the establishment of these commune systems in China as well. Mao Zedong didn't come out of nowhere and overthrow Chiang Kai-shek's Democratic Republic. You know, there had to be a lot of undercurrents and a lot of groundwork done, and that was what was happening. You see the thing going all through. So it's fair to say that communism, and we're talking about the despotic communism, where the ruling elite own everything, and the middle class or the lower class are the working poor. For them, that's the reality of the communist system, and it's Jewish, Ashkenazi Jewish, from A to Z.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk about J. Edgar Hoover and his fear that communists were infiltrating the civil rights movement, but he didn't seem to be bothered by the fact that they had infiltrated the government. I find that rather ludicrous that they would even print that. you know, if I go back to my Eisenhower research, I go back to the fact that we were funding the Soviet Union during World War II.
Exactly.
And why would he be concerned about the civil rights movement when the military was already funded and they were here in this country?
Well, it goes
idea of what that is, you know. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, again, it's exactly what JFK referred to in his famous speech at Columbia. You know what he referred to as a massive monolithic conspiracy, and in fact, you know, without specifically naming names, that's what it was all about. There were briefings given to JFK, to his brother Bobby, and others in the JFK administration on a weekly basis concerning the so-called SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and what it was really doing. For whatever reason, you know, again, JFK and Robert Kennedy were all very much for equal rights, and I am too, and so is most honest Americans. You know, discrimination against people on their color of their skin is absolutely not Christian and not what Christ taught. Okay, but does that mean you should intermarry or intermingle? I don't think that's a good thing to do, and for a number of reasons, really. But the bottom line is they should be given, and everybody should enjoy the same rights. It doesn't, you know, drinking from the same soda fountain or sitting in the same restaurant, that's ridiculous. Of course you should be allowed to do that. And that's what JFK and RFK were strongly for. So the premise of what King his message was correct, and that was good. But make no mistake, his people were subversive. There's no doubt about that with all the evidence coming out now.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make another point. You know, this attempted assassination on him by Mrs. Curry occurred in 1958, September 20th of 1958, and she made, according to the historians, she made this statement, "I've been looking for you for 5 years." Well, he didn't rise to any prominence on a national scale till 1955, and that was regarding a 15-year-old schoolgirl, Claudette Colvin, who refused to give her bus seat to a white man, according to the Jim Crow laws that had been established. The dates don't add up. The numbers don't add up, so why make up those stories?
Hmm.
Of course, they include Rosa Parks in there, December 1st, 1955. Nixon is mentioned. And of course, this is, I think, probably his first arrest. His house was bombed. He was arrested. And this created this big segregation movement in Montgomery, Alabama. It seems very orchestrated, doesn't it?
It does, especially when you look at Rosa Parks, which, mm-hmm. you know, the media portrays her as this lowly, hardworking seamstress, right? When in reality, there was a documentary, you know, research expose done. She was actually a part of this communist front group called the Highlander Folk School in Monteagle, Tennessee. And she was very much an associate in the SCLC with Dr. King. So, you know, this was far from being just a you know, a meek little seamstress setting up for her rights. She was absolutely a spark and well paid, you know, and well protected, I should add.
Mm-hmm. One wonders if she traveled up to Chicago and did any work up there with some of the groups that King got associated with. Primarily, and I bring that up because of Jesse Jackson. To some extent, I guess Ralph Abernathy was spent some time up there coordinating all these groups.
Exactly.
You know, it mirrors what's going on today. There's no doubt about it. Same people. Exactly.
The hypocrisy going on here, the Marxist/communist structure that Obama clearly has, you know, is covertly deeply involved with. You know, that's the agenda of these people to absolutely erode and decay the principles of true principles of equality in America. You know, the hypocrisy is so blatant. You see Obama being portrayed, for instance, as this wonderful family man, and yet we have the testimony of his homosexual escapades with Sinclair and others. We see the same thing going on behind the scenes with this Michael King, a.k.a. Martin Luther King, okay? You see, you know, all of his speeches, you know, his I Have a Dream speech, all this is talking about peace and love and nonviolence, you know, turning the other cheek and being Christian, right? Am I right on that?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's amazing, ladies and gentlemen, and this again, just think for yourself on this and do your own research. We find that in 1963, a black man from Monroe, North Carolina, who was named Robert Williams, according to the FBI's files, made quite an extended trip to none other than Peking, China, and he came there to China and met with Mao Zedong. Now, how did this happen, ladies and gentlemen? How do you get an audience? You're a nobody, really, an American citizen from Monroe, North Carolina. Your name is Robert Williams. You go to Peking, China. You get an audience with Mao. He successfully urged Mao Zedong to publicly speak out on behalf of Martin Luther King's movement. He comes back from China, and then, and this is 1963 again, ladies and gentlemen, he takes up his primary residence in Cuba, right in the, you know, just down the street from the offices of Fidel Castro, and then he proceeds to make regular 3 times a week broadcasts on his high power AM transmitters in Havana. The propaganda came out, it's called Radio Free Dixie, and he did this for many, many months, ladies and gentlemen. In these broadcasts, he urged violent attacks by the black population in the South against white Americans. He urged it. He said it was your Christian duty to come up and attack. Now, during this time, we find that this guy, Robert Williams, wrote a book entitled, and I kid you not, ladies and gentlemen, Negroes with Guns. It's a revolutionary primer. There's no doubt about this, and I think it's the impetus for the Black Panther movement, for Malcolm X, and these really radical, you know, even as I sit there say Nation of Islam, okay? Here's my point. What does Robert Williams have to do with anything? Well, Martin Luther King Jr., ladies and gentlemen, wrote the four.
Okay, your audio dropped out again, Drew. I don't know if you maybe have a loose cable, if you can still hear me.
I'm not even moving around at all. This is absolutely.
You came right back.
We're absolutely being messed with because I'm very, you know, I'm not moving around at all. My server's being attacked. I can tell.
Okay.
But anyway, the book Negroes with Guns was written by Robert Williams, and the foreword of the book, Martin Luther King Jr. So here's a book advocating violence, revolutionary overthrow, is basically one of the primers for the Black Panther movement, and you have Martin Luther King advancing it and writing the foreword for the book. Now, wait a minute. You know, does that mesh with his public speeches of, you know, peace and love and Christian charity and this and that? It doesn't fit.
We've been hearing a lot about dreams lately, haven't we? We had the dreamer in Tucson, the shooter. We had the no-legged Mac Daddy dreaming from his father.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This word and you know that's it appears to be more and more evident to me, at least in my own opinion, that all of these people were under mind control to a great extent.
Well, good point. David Garrow, he wrote the book The FBI and Martin Luther King Jr. He wrote and published his book in 1981. Garrow identifies this communist Ashkenazi Jew named Stanley Levison. In his book, he describes him as King's, quote, behind-the-scenes handler. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Levison, in the FBI information files, Levison had for years been in charge of the secret funneling of Soviet funds into the Communist Party USA. You see, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Martin Luther King's primary funding organ. This Levison being attached to SCLC and to King. You see, Levison was being watched by the FBI not only for the communist channeling of funds from the Soviet Union into American bank accounts, but also he was under investigation because of his ties to the Jewish mafia figures, okay? So Levison becoming basically the brains behind King, this is what made King be on the surveillance list. And again, this is the 1960s, ladies and gentlemen. You have judges giving, you know, warrants for wiretapping. I mean to tell you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you think this is just some kind of a right wing racist attack on Dr. King, well, there is mainstream media to a certain degree that you can get the information to. On January 19th of 1998, Newsweek, of no less than Newsweek, did a report. This is found on page 62 of the January 19th, 98 edition of Newsweek. And here's exactly what it says, quote, "January 6th, 1964 was a long day for Martin Luther King Jr. He spent the morning seated in the reserved section of the Supreme Court, listening as lawyers argued New York Times Company versus Sullivan, a landmark case rising out of King's crusade against segregation in Alabama. The minister was something of an honored guest there. Justice Arthur Goldberg," there's again another connection, Jewish justice, "quietly sent down a copy of King's account of the Montgomery bus boycott, Stride Toward Freedom, asking for an autograph." That's the book. Well, we know now the Stride Toward Freedom was actually authored by Levinson, the Jewish handler. Okay, so here's Goldberg, Supreme Court Justice Goldberg, out getting his Stride Toward Freedom copy for an autograph. And here the article, Newsweek article says, quote, "That night, King retired to his room at the Willard Hotel. There, FBI bugs reportedly picked up 14 hours of party chatter, the clinking of glasses, and the sounds of illicit sex, including King's cries of, quote, I'm effing for God, end quote, I'm not a Negro tonight." So, you know, what's not mentioned in this article, ladies and gentlemen, is the reports. And this is, again, in Ralph Abernathy's book of 1989, And the Walls Came Tumbling Down. Abernathy says that on this particular night, Martin Luther King was having sex with three white women, a 14-hour sex party, ladies and gentlemen, one of which he brutally beat while he was screaming the above-mentioned quotes.
Yes, now you gave the answer to why I played the song I did at the top of the show. Jimmy McCracklin's All Shucks.
Ah, shucks.
So there you have it. Another thing I want to bring up, you mentioned the SCLC. The secretary for the former president of Morehouse College, Benjamin Mays, was Dora E. McDonald, and she went to work for King in 1960. Now, do you suppose it was because she was such a good secretary, or do you suppose that college may have interfaced with this group? That may have, and maybe she was setting things up so that they could exchange data and do it maybe unobtrusively. And maybe it requires speculation on your part, but after that she went to work for Andrew Young.
I don't know, Don. I haven't come across that name in my research, but you know, it's clear that I have personally verified this. There's 14 file cabinet boxes. Could be even smaller files than that, but 14 of them have been sealed by a federal judge to not be released to the public until the year 2027. Why? Why seal up FBI files when, you know, this is supposed to be such a good man? What is there that they don't want the public to know about?
Oh, I think there's a lot there, and I think who he was connected to probably has more to do with it than who he was.
Exactly. Who is this Levinson, and how deep does it go into what JFK said was this monolithic and ruthless conspiracy? This is all connected. Look what's happened, ladies and gentlemen. You have the assassination of JFK, then you have the eventual assassination of RFK. You have, of course, the hit on Martin Luther King. The graves of John F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King have been graced with an eternal flame, an Illuminati symbol of conquering. Okay.
Yes. They make it a point to remind us about that. They certainly did back in 1963 for Kennedy's funeral.
Indeed.
They would show that image probably for hours over the 5 days, it seemed like, that was on television, maybe even more.
I have had the occasion to go to DC, and I have even been on at their Dealey Plaza. I talked about this on my show, Don, and there's a lot of esoteric symbolism, without a doubt. The circular disc and the eternal flame on the tomb of JFK is just, you know, just it just reeks to me of occultic symbolism. Okay, and there at Dealey Plaza, I was there in the summer of 2009. I actually did a radio show broadcast live there from Dealey Plaza. I basically walked the area. Then I saw, you know, went and got a diagram of the plaza, you know, from the tourist center there. And you know what I found out was amazing, Don, is that this thing is shaped like the Great Pyramid of Giza. It's a pyramid without a capstone, the capstone missing. It's clearly laid out in pyramid structure, okay? Mm-hmm. And then I did some digging. I says, Dealey, D-E-A-L-E-Y. What's that named after? Who's Dealey? Dealey, ladies and gentlemen, is a man named George Bannerman Dealey. Just happened to be there in a little. There's a little park and a monument to him with a plaque and the compass and square implanted. George Bannerman Dealey is a 33rd degree Mason, one of the big wigs of the Dallas area. Okay, now get this, ladies and gentlemen. When I found this out, you could have knocked me over with a feather, but I went to I walked the street. I figured out about where the motorcade would have come in 1963, and where the fatal bullet hit JFK. And I sat there with my cell phone and basically went into my Google Earth GPS and marked the spot. Then I came back when I marked the spot, came out and did the GPS coordinates, Don.
Mm-hmm.
That spot is exactly the 33rd parallel of the 33 degree of latitude.
Yes.
I don't think that's coincidence. And if you look at that point on the aerial layout of Dealey Plaza, again, this is like the Great Pyramid of Giza, okay, without a capstone. You see the location of where the fatal bullet struck was approximately the same location as the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid, if you look at the whole thing, you mm-hmm. know. I think that's extremely provocative. I really don't think it's coincidence at all. The date in which she was killed, November 22nd, which would be the 11th month, 22nd day, and the spot is the 33rd parallel. Oh, my goodness. Coincidence?
Well, you know, there are some things that come up, too, because what you're talking about, there's this secret numerology operating in the background, and if you only spend a few minutes, you can identify it like you just have. They say that Martin Luther King Jr. skipped both the 9th and the 12th grades and did not formally graduate from high school. Yet he enters Morehouse College at age 15 and gets a bachelor's degree, Bachelor of Arts in Sociology. Then he enrolls in Crozier Theological Seminary in Chester, Pennsylvania, and he graduated with a Bachelor of Divinity degree in 1951. Now, there's no mention of any special testing. Certainly, if you could just quit school, if you could skip two grades, someone is pulling strings to move him into a timeline. That's the point I'd like to make. It's not about how brilliant he was. He was receiving some kind of special training during that time, if you get my meaning. Prepare him for a role, because they had calculated that this would have to occur on a certain date, and he was chosen for that role. So they sped him up along that line. And then again, you know, we'd have to look at transcripts, wouldn't we?
It would appear that something was moving him. Again, we have a ton of evidence that he really, his doctoral thesis was complete, was 90% plagiarized. And this is, again, coming out of now of research of from his own institute people, the Crozer Theological Seminary in Boston University. How did he get the PhD? This author, Garrow, on page 89 of his book says, quote, King's academic compositions, especially at Boston University, why Boston, see, again, mm-hmm. were almost without exception little more than summary descriptions and comparisons of others' writings. Nonetheless, the papers almost always received desirable letter grades, strongly suggesting, he says, quote, that King's professors never did expect more from him. Mm-hmm. The failure of King's teachers to notice his pattern of textual appropriation, in other words, plagiarism, is somewhat remarkable.
Hmm. I think some would have credited that to Howard Thurman, who they say he visited quite a bit while he was at Boston University. It sounds like handlers were at every stage of the game ready, you know, to mold him into playing this role. I'm not saying at all that it's not a good thing for somebody to be a spokesperson, a front man for equality of any kind. But let's bring out all the facts.
Indeed, and I quoted in my other show, and I'll quote it tonight again, the New York Times, no less, on October 11th, 1991, page 15 of that, kind of buried towards the back, they reported that on October 10th, the day before, a committee of researchers at Boston University publicly in a press release. Now, Don, this is big news. It's buried on page 15. It should be first or second page, and it should be in more than just the New York Times, because mm-hmm. they put out this press release. Boston University researchers publicly admitted in a press release, quote, there is no question but that Dr. King plagiarized his dissertation. Despite the finding, of course, in the same newspaper report, the committee publicly said, quote, no thought should be given, however, to the revocation of Dr. King's doctoral degree, an action the panel said, quote, would serve no purpose. Wait a minute. If you were a white man and they did this, do you think you'd be taken out and stripped of your PhD? I submit they would. And it's just justice that you have that. It's willful fraud.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor should be removed from King's name and the reverend title as well, since we see the Crozer Theological Seminary, the grades were basically bestowed upon him.
Yes. This obsession with visiting the birthplaces or the graves of pioneers in these types of movements, activism, and Gandhi. Why would someone be provoked to go to India other than to try to ride the coattails of another individual or to portray his or herself per the wishes of the handlers as someone mirroring the qualities of a Mahatma Gandhi, for example? It doesn't make sense. Wouldn't he do a better job visiting the ghettos and the inner cities of America during that time?
Well, one would think again, but where did the funds come for this? You know, this is the other part of this. You know, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. You know, we're not just talking about a few, you know, tens of thousands, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about millions of dollars coming from where? From the poor inner city slums or the sharecropping huts? Where did this money come from?
Well, they claim it came from the American Friends Service Committee.
American Friends Service Committee.
Yes. This is a worldwide group originating out of Haverford, Pennsylvania, located in Philadelphia. See, this connects with the same group that we're dealing with today, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Isn't that interesting? You see the...
They work with, you know, Russia, Serbia, Poland, Germany, and Austria.
Wow.
And it was chartered by Herbert Hoover to provide the United States-sponsored relief to Germans.
Hmm.
1918. Well, you see, when you start connecting all the dots, it's serving someone else's agenda, isn't it? It really has nothing to do with what's going on here. It's only portrayed to be something that's going on here.
Indeed. And then I, you know, reported on, you know, the official FBI files, let me just repeat, have been sealed on Dr. Martin Luther King's the surveillance for the year 2027. But that doesn't stop people like FBI Assistant Director William Sullivan and others who had direct access to their surveillance. That doesn't stop them from speaking out and from being part of research books, which they've done. Assistant Director of the FBI, William C. Sullivan, he says in his affidavit, he says he described himself as a liberal and 100% for King initially, quote, because he said, "I saw him as a very effective and badly needed leader for the black people in their desire for civil rights." Well, I can agree with that. That's right. But he goes on to say that the probe of King not only confirmed the FBI suspicions about King's communist beliefs and associates, he said, but he says, and this is his words, not mine, Don. He said, this is Sullivan speaking. He says, King revealed himself to be, quote, a despicable hypocrite, an immoral degenerate, and what he called, quote, a worthless charlatan. Now, this is from a guy, he's not right-wing, you know, neo-Nazi type of individual at all. He's left-leaning. He's a Democrat. Mm. Why would he say such a thing if it wasn't true?
You mentioned David Garrow, and he was a King biographer.
Exactly, the official biographer.
Yeah, he said... Archivally, I know quite well an awful lot of the letters that people received around the world signed by Dr. Martin Luther King, I suppose he meant Junior, were actually signed by Dora McDonald, the secretary that I mentioned. So now that's considered almost a courtesy, but one wonders if those autographs are being sold on the market as genuine photographs to collectors. Before we end the show, I'd like to play a song. This is probably more in line with the holiday and the upbringing. Martin Luther King sang in the choir at the Atlanta opening of Gone with the Wind. This is not from Gone with the Wind, but it's of that flavor. And this is Donnie Hathaway's Lord Help Me.
God help me. God help me. God Once more again, your humble servant is called and on your name. I got something I want you to do for me. Help me to inspire those that need inspiration. Let my life be a sign of a coming generation. To know that there's a purpose for living. And Lord, Lord, yeah, Lord, I want you to help me this evening.
Donny Hathaway certainly had a way of saying it, delivering the message, but he did not win a Pulitzer Prize.
And he has no national holiday named after him either.
No, no.
You know, and I just want to just say in closing, Don, that was that's a good message. And, you know, I, as you were playing that, I just kept thinking of one of probably one of my favorite movies of all time, Forrest Gump, and his friendship with his buddy Bubba.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the Vietnam War, you know, and we need to all just kind of have that Bubba Gump attitude, the Forrest Gump attitude. And you look at everything, you know, with the eyes of innocence and love, and you do the right thing. You know, you help your brother along, whether he's black or red or white. You just do that. And you know, that's a neat story that, you know, that goes on and goes to Bubba's mother and tells her about the, you know, the shrimp boat thing. And what does she tell him? Why, you crazy boy, or just plain stupid?
Yeah.
But,
You know, that it's kind of an ingenious script in that movie, how they snuck all these historical tidbits into it.
Indeed.
The Kennedy assassination, and here you have this Gomer Pyle-type character that hits it rich and falls in love with his childhood sweetheart and overcomes, I think my favorite scene in the movie was the football game where he went...
Stop, Forrest, stop!
He ran out of off the field for a touchdown and kept running through the tunnel.
That's right. You know, and it's just, you know, I think there's Forrest Gump in all of us, you know, and the reason why it's my favorite show is there's a lot of philosophy there that, you know, even though Forrest is not smart, you know, he's deeply touching spiritually, and that's what prevails, you know, the feather in the wind floating. And, you know, his final thing is, he says, are we just floating on the wind by mere chance, or is there a design, you know, a specific pattern to our lives? And what does he say? And this is great philosophy. You know, he says, I kind of think it's both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's exactly right. You know, we're floating along on a stream, but, you know, we are special creations of God with a pattern. You know, and that's the message I want to leave with our listeners tonight, Don, is just, you know, there's words of Dr. King that are true words, okay?
Mm. Yeah, this isn't trash Dr. Martin Luther King night. That's not what we're saying here. But we're pointing out the fact that there was a lot more going on behind the scenes.
Oh, definitely. And it's a hidden agenda, ladies and gentlemen. We got to understand that, or we won't have any hope of stopping the flow today. That's my message.
Yes. Well, Dr. Ott, I appreciate the message and the research you did. This is something that I looked at many years ago, and I've returned to it, especially when I was doing my own work on the Bush-Scherf connection to the Kennedy assassination. And I see lots of parallels here. Many of the same names crop up again. And that's not by coincidence that occurs. And we have to wake up to that. So,
yeah, it's just amazing how Henry Kissinger was doing his job in the 60s, and this guy's still cropping up handling Sarah Palin, for heaven's sakes. So, you know, it's just, these guys just seem like they got eternal life. I don't know. They just keep coming back like a bad vampire.
Dr. King got his name while he was in Germany. Do you suppose Mr. Kissinger had anything to do with that?
Well, again, Michael King, the story, you know, he was born in 1929.
Mm-hmm.
His father was a minister as well. He was just known as Daddy King. He came to his congregation and he just declared out of the blue that he had this revelation that he should be named after the German reformer Martin Luther. And so he says, I'm now Martin Luther King, and my boy is Martin Luther King Jr. From here on henceforth, that's how you, the congregation, will administer him. But it's, you know, he never officially changed his name or anything to Martin Luther. And again, that's a German reformer.
Well, we can say the same thing about Jim Nabors and Gomer Pyle. I don't ever think he changed it, but I think more people recognize him as Gomer Pyle. You know, so.
Well, Gomer says hi. Gotta go.
Yes. And Goober is in the wings for the next show. Well, Dr. Rod, I want to thank you for being on the show and letting our listeners know also that you will be with us again next Monday. I appreciate your contribution to the truth and your diligent work in finding it and bringing it to us.
Well, we do our best, and thank you for your work and research. I don't know how you come up with the things you do, Don, but you know, when I think I've got you scooped, I find out that I just scratched the surface and you're digging the trench.
I listened to Donny Hathaway sing, Lord, Help Me.
Amen to that, brother. Good night.
All right. You have a good night. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. And tonight's guest, Dr. A. True Ott. Be sure to visit Dr. Ott's website, and that is atrueott.com. And my kudos to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBS Radio. Seth Hendrick on the sound. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night for another show. And if you give me a moment here, I should let you know who's coming on. I should have had that ready, but didn't. And it'll just take me a brief moment. While I'm looking for that, be sure if you would like to get an archived copy of Evident Footprints or any other show on bbsradio.com, an annual subscription will permit you to do that, all under one nominal fee. Now, I do have Adrian Salbucci booked for the show, providing he confirms before tomorrow night. He's been out on vacation. He was with us about 2 weeks ago. So we're hoping to have Adrian Salbucci from Argentina with us tomorrow night. In the meantime, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Again, join me tomorrow night. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.